Good evening. Welcome, everyone, to what will be my final Dharma talk of the season. Joel will be giving the talk next week. And then after that, we will be, for 6 weeks, not having any talks on Thursday night. So I'm happy to see you all. Happy to be here. It's always an interesting time of year in France because we are wrapping everything up, finishing the year, having all kinds of meetings to finish the year and everything, while at the same time projecting ahead to what will happen in September. And this is how it is in my various activities that I'm involved in. I feel like I've almost come to the end of that phase. It's also summer, hot here. And last night in my neighborhood and in many other neighborhoods in France, there was a great deal of violence, fires, projectiles, protesters attacking the town hall, which is right around the corner from where I live, and the police station, which is kind of up, a few hundred meters the other way. Lighting fires and things. And so that has been very present too. I'm sure you've heard about it in wherever you live. There was a boy who was killed on Tuesday afternoon, Tuesday morning actually, I think, by a policeman, shot in his car. Basically, he was stopped because he ran through a stop sign and the policeman shot him and killed him. So, of course, there's a lot of rage and protest around this, which is the rage and protest is not unusual in France, but that exact circumstance is also not as is not so unusual, but it is. In America, we have that kind of thing all the time, but in France, not so much. So it's promising to be a hot at least week or so, maybe even more summer. And so I've been thinking about that today. I actually was out last night and didn't come home until after 11. And when I came home, there were a lot of people in the street and waiting around for buses that clearly were not coming. And there was a woman talking on her phone saying how terrible it was. And she was saying there were fires and things. There was nothing at 11 when I got home. So I guess it had happened before. In the distance, I could see like lots of fireworks and things, but and then there was a lot of noise before I went to bed. But in my bedroom, we have double window, what we call in French double vitrage, double glazing, I guess we say in English. And I also put in earplugs because it was loud. But then the neighbors told me, the people at the Dana Center told me that it was really frightening. And that they, when they opened their windows, there was a lot of smoke and tear gas that came in. And this was like probably 1 in the morning. And then I heard that Geno Roshi left this morning for a vacation in Greece and she had an early plane. And so they took her to the airport at 4 in the morning. They got up to take her to the airport. And they had to take a different route because there were fires in the streets at 4. So I've been thinking about all of that all day. And thinking about this, you know, last week we talked about the solstice and how the word solstice, the Latin origin of solstice, is sun standing still. Because it reaches its highest point, and so the ancient peoples, you know, considered that it was not moving. It was the one day of the year when it was not moving. And we've kept that word, solstice. So we talked about that last week, and how that related to our practice, and in a way, veered off into some other things. But so I was thinking about that again, and how this basic idea of Chan and Zen, of, you know, even when we give basic instructions for meditation, we say don't move. People have this idea that when we sit in our meditation posture, we're not supposed to move. And that can be torture, especially when we first start sitting. And we're not used to not moving like that. It's really, really difficult. And even, you know, even experienced meditators have a hard time sometimes sitting because they have a pain in their back, or they're agitated, or whatever. And so, as you've heard me say, I like to remind us that the point is, it's not about not moving physically. That's not the point. Of course, that does help us to keep our mind stable. You know, when we give the example of the jar of dirty water, if we're shaking it up, if our mind is moving, shaking around, we won't see clearly. But if we put the jar down and let the dirt settle to the bottom, then we can see clearly through the water. And the same thing applies to our sitting posture. So it does help us to not move. But when we give that instruction, or when in the very essence of Zen and Chan, this not moving means to not move from this moment. And of course that means then, because the moment is moving all the time, that means we have to move with the moment. But that means not moving from the moment if we move with the moment. And so that sometimes can be very confusing. Even now when I'm saying it, it sounds really kind of obscure and conceptual, because it is. I'm giving definitions of it, and it is conceptual. But our whole practice is about cultivating this mind that moves spontaneously and unrestrained, that stays true to its nature, which is fluid, emptiness. And there's a term in Chinese that is often used in relation to Zen Chan practice, which is Wu Wei, which means not acting. You know, that's one translation of it, not acting. And this reminds me of Bernie Glassman's three tenets, where, you know, there's not knowing, meaning letting go of ideas about the situation, about myself, about everything. And then once we've let go of the ideas, we can just bear witness. We can just be present to what is, fully present, because we don't have any ideas about it anymore. So, you know, okay, how can I be fully present to the situation of this boy being killed by a policeman for going through a stop sign? I have a lot of ideas about it. So if I can let go of my ideas and just bear witness to that situation, just be present to it, then we come to this, what I'm reminding you of, Wu Wei, or not acting. Bernie Glassman has gone through various translations, various versions of it, but there was, first it was then loving action, but then he decided loving was too charged, that that was too directive. And he tried healing action, same thing. And then he settled upon appropriate action. Now, I think the peacemakers have gone back to loving action, but I'm not sure about it. So appropriate action is the equivalent of not acting in the sense of acting without this identity, self, identity with self, that compromises our action. That means that we act from the empty self, from the wild mind. The wild mind appeals to me much more than the empty self, but it's the same thing. So if I look at this situation, this boy who's killed, and just bear witness to it, what's the appropriate action? From my level, I guess for me, the appropriate action is to not fuel further aggression, to not go out there and set cars on fire and fire projectiles at the mairie, and at the town hall. And what would that mean if, I'm sure that it's difficult for the boy's family. Actually, his mother is a single mother, and he was her only child. So she's alone, basically, but of course she has the community around her. But so that they have she has a different kind of letting go of not knowing, letting go of ideas and bearing witness and appropriate action, because her circumstances are different. I can't answer if she went through that process, what would happen? I think if collectively the society went through that process, the whole event would never have happened, because a lot of the action that has led to it and the reactions to it come not from a place of not knowing, but from a place of knowing, of separation, of fixed ideas, fixed identities. It's an example of how we do harm when we come from a place of, when we don't go through not knowing, bearing witness, and appropriate action. When we act from a place of, an identity center, then we have very little chance of not doing any harm. And I'm not by any means trying to suggest that I have the solution for the situation. I don't. And I, like everyone, I'm really a little worried about what's going to happen next. I think tonight will probably be another night like last night, more or less. And usually at this time of year, there's the national holiday in 2 weeks, and usually there's a lot of stuff to have violence around it. I have no solution. I can only speak to my own practice and my own process. I was speaking today with someone who has a newborn baby, and was having, you know, it's very intense to have a newborn baby. So there are people on the screen who know what that is. And very little time for anything else apart from taking care of the child. And then when the child sleeps, well, then you have to clean and do the laundry and go shopping and whatever else. So there's very little time for anything else. And the baby's actually 4 months old now, so it's not like brand new, but still. And so there was this question of, well, you know, there's the Zen thing of, the traditional Zen saying of small doubt, no doubt, no awakening. Small doubt, small awakening. Great doubt, great awakening. And so this, you know, young new father was saying, you know, I guess that's just not, I know this, and it's just it's impossible for me. I can't even get myself in a position of having doubt or not in doubt, you know. And I love this, what I'm doing, but I just, you know, I feel like I don't want my life to, I don't want my life to be reduced to this, but I would like to have my life be fulfilled in another way, you know. And so he was asking me what I did, because I had small children and was practicing and was living in a Zen center with small children. And I reminded him, I don't think he was on the screen last week. He was not actually last week, but I reminded him of what we said last week about when you no longer know what to do, that's when the real work begins. And when you no longer know where to go, that's where your real journey is. And I told him about that. And said that the position he was in now of not knowing what to do with his life, beyond being a young father, which he loves, nothing wrong with that, was exactly a position of doubt. That's what we're talking about. When we talk about great doubt, it's just no longer having a fixed idea. It's this position of not knowing in Bernie's three-step process. It's letting go of our ideas about what we should do and what we shouldn't do. And he said to me, I know that you at one point, you decided to work part-time. And I said, yes, that's true, but it wasn't just like that. I took a maternity leave. And then, because French law allows it, for the first year, I went back just part-time to my work. And then French law allows you to do that another year. So I did that for 2 years. And then French law lets you to do that for a third year. So I did it for 3 years. And then by the time the 3 years were up, I knew then that my heart was not on the career path. And so I asked my employer, and the employer accepted that I worked part-time. But the key was, I knew my heart wasn't in it. And so there was no longer any doubt. I didn't know what then it would be like committing to working part-time for the rest of my days. I could have gone back anytime to full-time, but I knew that my heart was not in the full-time work. And he said, yeah, but I don't know what my heart is in. And I said, well, you do, because you know what it feels like. Your heart is fully in taking care of your child, and when you do that, completely, and you know that. And he agreed with that. So I said, so you know what that feels like to be heart fully involved with something, fully, you know, that's like a no mind. Parenting is a no mind thing. There's no self involved in this, really. Of course, sometimes there is, you're frustrated, you want to do something else, you're tired, you wish the kid would go to sleep or whatever, but you're selflessly giving yourself to this. And I said, so you know what that feels like. And the more you, if you can use this young parenting as the same thing as a retreat, because it is, it's just like a lifelong retreat, or at least a retreat for like 18 or 20 years, it's the same thing. You know, it's just different constraints. It's just different structure that you've been given, but it's the same thing. And I said, for me, it was the royal path. It was like permanent retreat. And being in that strict retreat setting 24/7 helped me to then see more clearly, to feel more clearly what it was I really wanted to do, that I did want to work part-time. If I had not had the constraints of that, of raising children, I wouldn't have been able to see that so clearly. There would have been lots more options, in other words. So I'm only giving this example because this, it speaks to this process of not knowing, bearing witness, and then action. So when you're involved with a small baby, there's a lot of not knowing going on. Literally, because you have no idea. You're a new parent and you don't know why the kid is crying. You don't know what they want. You don't know if you're doing the right thing. Each stage is new. You become more confident about some things, but then it's new, the child has evolved, and a lot of, you don't know. And there's a lot of doubt involved with parenting. However, you can be a much better parent, as the parents on the screen know, if you let go of your ideas about what it is to be a good parent, and just be there, do what needs to be done. Not acting from the identity center self, in other words. So that's the not knowing aspect. Bearing witness then, okay, I'm just listening to my child. I'm just paying attention. What does she or he need? What kind of food? How should we put them to sleep? Or whatever is required. And then you can act more appropriately if you've gone through these two steps. And of course, the steps are not necessarily linear. And yet they are. And it's not something we constantly are thinking about, but we can train in it, which is what we do in our practice. We train in just sitting. Already we have noise out there in the street. Loud noises. We train in just sitting, which means to just be here with what is. It's a training in not knowing and bearing witness at once. And then when we get up from our cushion is when we enter the not acting or the appropriate action, something like that. So I don't know what the appropriate action is with the mortar being fired in the street. I don't know, but I can just bear witness to it. Of course, I protect my house, and I don't think my house is really in danger, but. Not go to in the middle of the violence or something. Maybe if there's some kind of peaceful protests, joining in the peaceful protests. But unfortunately, they tend to end. Today, there was one and it ended badly, apparently. Last night in the little shopping center near my house, the Orange Boutique, which Orange is a telephone, mobile phone provider, was completely trashed. The perfume Marionneau, which is a chain of perfume stores, completely trashed. So, you know, there's like stuff that has nothing to do with anything that happens. So I need to bear witness and decide if it's appropriate for me to go into that kind of demonstration. Or maybe demonstrating is not what it's called for. But I know that I can, as we always say, stay with it. Like you've heard me say many times about a koan, stay with it. And that's, this is a koan, so stay with it. I stay with it. Which means cultivating this mind of not knowing, which is a mind of moving with the moment. Instead of being fixed on one position, it moves with the moment. And the same thing goes for everything in life, whether it's raising a baby, whether it's organizing a retreat, Zen retreat. You know, we've gone through this whole thing of organizing the retreat this summer, and it involved a lot of not knowing, bearing witness, and then appropriate action. And it's still ongoing, of course. Even during the retreat, the same thing happens. During your everyday lives. I saw this thing, there's this someone in the peacemaker community who does this practice called Simple Life, which I don't really know exactly what it is. I did a workshop with him last year at the White Plum Teachers meeting, but so he asks this question, which I wrote down. How can we live in the way that embodies the basic principles of the Dharma? It was like a pretty basic question, right? So how do we live in a way that embodies the basic principles of the Dharma? Well, we have to define what the basic principles of the Dharma are, right? His answer, though, is a lifestyle that manifests contentment, health, and freedom on a daily basis. Okay, that's a big program. But actually, when he does his workshops, it all makes sense. Very simple, simple life. It means just to basically what we've been talking about of cultivating this mind of being here now and responding accordingly to whatever arises. That's a big concept that I just said, but that's really what it's about. It means renouncing what is harmful to us and to others. So renouncing violence, renouncing unhealthy habits we might have. As a culture, you know, it means renouncing car culture, plastics, excessive airplane travel. I mean, that's just the big stuff. It really means coming back to like living local, living by like in Oriyoki, just the right amount, knowing what is the right amount. There's a lot of different ways of expressing it. If we come back to our basic practice of cultivating this mind of not knowing, we have a better chance of seeing what that simple life is, of what is the right amount? What is it that I need? It's our vows, of reality is boundless. Delusions are inexhaustible. So we come back to just this, as we did in our writing workshop. And in the writing workshop on Saturday, as João, I think João was the only one who was there, right? Yeah. And Tiago too. So I gave them what I give to all in every writing workshop I do, this simple suggestion to write every day. Three simple things. Note something that surprised you during the day. Note something that inspired you during the day. And note something that touched you or moved you during the day. So you do this at night. Or you can do it in the morning and refer to the previous day. And if nothing surprised you, you write that. Nothing surprised me today. If nothing inspired you, nothing inspired me. And if nothing touched you, nothing touched me. But you just make a note of it. And what happens is that it brings an attention to the world and the day that is not there. It focuses our attention in a way. And I don't know if João and Tiago can testify to this, but I know that when I do that, often whatever surprises me also inspires and touches me. So it's not, I don't really have to look very far. And once I start paying attention to what surprised me, there's a lot that surprises me. I mean, it's almost like every moment surprises me when I start paying attention. It's like we say that there's nothing that's boring. If we're paying attention, we are truly here, we're bearing witness to it. Nothing's boring. And everything is surprising in that sense. And it may not be, I can be surprised that boy was killed on Tuesday. However, I'm not really surprised. I might say, oh, that's shocking or something, but I'm not really surprised by it. I'm touched by it, I think. I could be surprised by the fact that such violence still exists, or the stupidity of it, the futility of it. I could be surprised by that. It doesn't have to be surprised like in some, oh, that's such a beautiful thing that happened, surprised. It's surprising. It just shakes your fixed position about something, often is what it is. So I think I will stop there and let you share. Question. Participate in any way you would like. Ready?
Good night, everybody. It's really an amazing word. We are amazed. We are always in awe. I met an old friend the other day. He was my physics teacher. He taught me physics and math. And we had a fantastic discussion, a fantastic exchange, saying that this world is not what we put that the world is, that the sun is not the center of the universe, that it's black hole actually are the center of the universe. And a new telescope has sent us images of the world that is older than the prediction that we thought that the universe is. So the illusion are inexistable. That what we think is not is. What we see is not what we, so we are. We are in an amazing universe that we are discovering every day. Maybe what we think is justice is not justice. What we think, this earth is going around the sun at a third the speed of the sound. So it's, and we are still, and it's not still, and so on. And in a way, it's related to what you say, Roshi, so that it's a it's an amazing universe.
Well, and what's even more amazing about it is that we are the universe, mm-hmm. See, which is cool. Mm-hmm.
Good evening, everyone. The exercise, Roshi, you were talking about that you suggested during the writing workshop. I've been doing that. And what's interesting is it's not so much about the moment when I write something down. Usually it's the end of the day. That's when I'm already back home. And it's also the interesting is that it's not about the moment when I am writing those three things down. What I notice is it's when I experience something, or when I see something, when I observe something, whatever, it brings the appreciation, maybe so much more closer to the actual moment when something that I will write down later in the day, but the attention is I'm much more present. So that's actually what I mean to write today about surprising, because I haven't written it down yet. This is what I realized today. I was just looking at trash actually because I went for a big walk and I was looking at. I went walking through a road where usually not many people walk because it's lots of traffic. It's not very nice to walk, but it was the shortest route to wherever I wanted to go. And I was just looking at trash on the streets. It was just that. So I'm going, and I realized how much present I was at that moment when I was looking at the trash on the. Yeah, thank you.
Hello. Olivia is now 1.5 years old and she always wants to go outside. She goes to the door and says, out, out. And so we go out and explore the neighborhood. And because of her, I've noticed 3 different types of birds that are around the neighborhood where I live. And today there was the building in front of our house. It was being painted and the man working, they had an elevator to go up and down the facade. And she just stopped and was looking at the man working. So I was there with her, we just looking at that. And these are things I would never do if it hasn't been for Olivia. Notice all these things. So. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Laura. That's beautiful. That's, you know, really the beginner's mind. You know, in the child's mind, everything is new and beautiful. And for the adult, you don't even notice it. But if you pay attention to your child and look at it, and what's tragic is when parents say, oh, that's not important. Why are you even looking at that? That's what's really tragic. Whereas you turn your attention to it too and appreciate it. Yep.
Last week we had a session in The Hague. It was a session as usual. Nevertheless, we were with a small group, I think 6, 7, or 8 people, something like that, at a certain moment. When we started, we were with a small group and we were asking ourselves, how are we going to do this with Oriyaki? What came to mind was the way we did Oriyaki in this circle in Nwazi. So I proposed let's do it this way, and we did it in the circle actually. And then it was really surprising what happened, because we were in this circle and it was completely new to everyone. And the only difference was we were just sitting in a circle instead of doing it in the normal way. And myself, it's the same thing. That was really another example of beginner's mind. How is this working? It's quite funny.
Yeah, it's really powerful when we, because we get used to doing things a certain way, and we get used to ourselves being a certain way. We get used to others being a certain way, and we want to keep it that way. And so it's wonderful when we can open it up and be free. And it's true that if we look on, so if I bring this back to the situation with the boy who was killed, so the boy was of, he's French, but he's of Algerian and Moroccan descent. So of course we know what that means. And then we know how the police behave when there's someone that looks like that. That's what's having a fixed idea. You know, I was once with my husband when he went through a stop sign. He didn't see it. He's, you know, went through it and the police pulled him over, but they didn't pull a gun and they didn't treat him the way that I'm sure they treated that boy. He doesn't look like that boy. And he therefore doesn't fit in with their fixed idea of, you know, it'd be like if Bart Sangha said, no, this is how Orioki is. You can't do it any other way. That we see the tragic consequences of having a fixed position. Not that Bart Sangha saying, no, we can't do it a different way would have been tragic, but we can see where it leads. And I must admit that when I saw the images of the demonstration today that took place, this protest against the killing, I was so heartened by the fact to see that the crowd was completely mixed, that there were people of all races, all ages in that crowd, that it wasn't just his neighborhood friends or just a certain kind of person. Only young people, or you know, I was really heartened by that. Completely mixed. People letting go of their ideas. So now we're faced with, okay, our ideas about what it means to have a summer break, what it means to not have Dharma talks on Thursday night, might mean, oof, great, now I can do something else on Thursday night. It might be, oh yeah, I'm going to the beach. I am going to the beach next week and I'm very happy about it. It might mean, oh, I'm going to miss it or something. I don't know. But we have this great opportunity to open up to whatever arises. Ready?
Are we open enough to write new poetry where black holes are the center of our universe instead of the sun? Are we ready to switch things around? It's a question for the poet.
Yes, well, since you raised the issue, and I'm sure you weren't referring to this, but we are switching things around next year in September. In September, the Dharma Talk will not be on Thursday night. It will be on Monday night. It will still be online. And the reason we're doing it is because we also, for the first time in 19 years, will no longer be doing our Monday night sitting at Joa and Delphine's house. So Lisa and I have decided to find another place, and I'm hoping that it works, the place that we have in mind. But it's only available on Thursday. So we're switching and doing the sitting, just sitting practice on Thursday night, and the Dharma talk sitting practice on Monday night. And the Thursday night sitting will no longer be online. It will only be in person. Those are the two big changes. So Freddie's mentioning, are we free to change? Well, yes, we are. But you will be receiving an email about all of this, about everything that's changing in the next few weeks. After 19 years, you know, it seemed like it was okay to change. In fact, it feels good to change. And, you know, it's also because Joa is doing other things. I mean, he has other stuff to do. He's going to be working on building his, opening his center in Arles in South France, and his other commitments in Paris. And so it was just time to move. New chapter. I'm excited about it, actually. Looking forward to it. I know that maybe is not what you were referring to, Freddie, but it, you gave me the opening to say it.
It's a big change for me. It's a
big change for you.
Because with Monday, it's not possible to leave.
Yeah. I mean, this may be the case. And I'm sorry for people who won't be able to make it. But maybe that will evolve too. And at some point, your schedule will change. And the talks are always online. As we know. And yeah, it's we don't really have a choice. I mean, our choice is basically doing the talk on Monday or Tuesday rather than Thursday. Because the place that we're thinking of going is only the or Friday, but we don't need a Friday. And we don't know yet what will be happening in Lisbon. Well, it's an open subject.
Well, I guess we won't be sitting on Mondays. I'll need to change that. Yeah, we'll see.
Well, it could be possible to sit on Monday and have a Dharma talk. Maybe people would come if they knew there was a Dharma talk. I don't know. So, I guess we're about out of time, unless someone wants to add something. Next Thursday, Joa will be giving the talk. I will be away. Lisa?
Well, maybe just say thank you for this year of Dharma Talks. And have a nice holiday next week.
Thank you very much. Thank you. It has been a rich year. Yeah, a lot of Dharma talks, which are all online, so people can look at them, hear them. And it's my pleasure. There's nowhere else I would rather be right now. And here, so sharing with you. Okay, thank you.